Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon to you, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sean Carey with you. Steve Jones on his way in to the Sunbury Motors Studio as we speak. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You can listen to us live thanks to our WKOK apps. It doesn't matter where you are. You can download our app from either Google Play or the Apple App Store, search WKOK. And, of course, we always archive our shows with our podcast. You can go to stevejonesshow.com and go to the podcast page, and you can go back in time, listen to any of our previous shows on the podcast page. We will keep you posted on new information regarding our podcast. Hopefully in the not-too-distant future, you'll be able to listen to the Steve Jones Show podcast either on your Droid phone or your Apple phone, thanks to either Google Play or iTunes. So,
wow.
Yep, we're in the process of working on that as we speak.
I probably won't. Usually after I've heard it once, like doing it originally, I don't listen to it later, but that's okay.
You're good.
Yeah. I'm good.
You're good. So, but we're in the process of putting that together and, to get our podcast out to as many people as we can.
And who is helping you with this project?
That would be the suit. I know. You're sitting down, right?
So I'd like to point out that the odds of this really happening are a little bit greater than you realize.
It's going to happen, but we may take the scenic route in doing it. But I hear you. But we're going to make it happen.
Now, who's one of our favorite guests? A guest that's been specifically requested by our listeners over time. Rich Scarsella. We're going to have him on the show today.
The highly respected Penn State beat writer in Reading.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, on the show today. So that's today's show. I think that's a winner.
Sure is.
And we'll talk with both of them later in the show. This is the calm before the storm. Lawrence has a perfect bracket so
really?
Far. Can you believe that?
Man, he's been keeping it on the down low. He's not going down the hall, beating his chest, and he hasn't been bragging to McGranahan on the mark about it. So this is
it is amazing. This is a perfect bracket through the opening weekend. He doesn't like to brag, and I'm really impressed with what he,
But we need to get that to Warren Buffett. We got to try something here.
But it's just, Lawrence is a no-ego guy.
Correct.
And he's simple as that. And that's why he doesn't want it out there that he's done this, but I have certain information that tells me that perfection is at hand. Peace in our time.
Well, I'm not questioning your sources and would never do that.
Then at the opposite end, the suit has them all. I was 0 for 32. And you're sitting there telling me he's in charge of getting us on iTunes?
How could really? Our multiple three-time college football bowl prediction champ do a complete 180 when it comes to hoops?
He's still whining about what some game?
Oh, the Arkansas State game. Oh, yeah, he's still whining about that bowl game.
Okay, I have two words. I want him to understand the two words very carefully. Who cares? Do you understand the two words? Who cares? Oh. But Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, Rich Scarcello, Reading Eagle on the show today. Did you see the article on Penn Live that David Jones wrote? Well done. Most of it's true. On Penn State and the NCAA tournament in 2001, trying to get into New Orleans. Really, really. I mean, Dave did a great job of writing it. There's one particular area where somebody steered him wrong, and I can correct it because I was a witness. I was on the plane. I'll tell you what that is. Penn State has to get selected to play in New Orleans. And, you know, there's a charter to take them in. And I think we just used the same charter company we always use going in. It wasn't anything specific beyond that. And it was the usual travel party with coaches' families on there as well. It's about what the travel party was. And so Dave goes through it. He does a great job of talking about, hey, look, they're going down there, how we had to stop in Memphis and refuel. Okay? And then there were violent, violent storms that took place over Louisiana that night. And Dave talked with Titus Ivory, Joe Crispin, John Crispin, Sharif Chambliss, Tyler Smith. He did a great job getting a real cross-section of players. He got some great quotes from players about, look, one second you're in Tennessee, the next second you're in Mississippi, the next second you're in Arkansas, the next second you're in Louisiana, one second you're 30,000 feet, the next one you think you're 20, the next second you think you're back to 25. I mean, we bounced all over the place. I mean, it was a bad flight. And Dave did a great job of capturing all of that and all the emotion. I think he even talked to Dr. Margaret Patukian, too, and we've referenced her in the show before, about that flight. And Sandy Meyer, the academic advisor, for being on that flight, and quoted all them. And all the stuff is absolutely accurate, except the end. I don't know what they told him, because he can only write what he's been told. But they were talking about the landing, emergency vehicles out there, and players kissing the tarmac and the whole thing. Well, that part's not true. Whomever told him that, that's not exactly right, because once... Oh, I'll tell you the key part that's absolutely... You know, like I said, all of what he wrote... And quoted, all true, all true, all true. Now, it was a violent flight, lots of drops, back up, drop, back up, over here. It was bad. And the pilot made an announcement, and this is true. When Dave writes a story, it's absolutely true. We have enough fuel to make one landing attempt. And that's all he told us. Now, as an experienced traveler, I knew what it meant. In other words, all right, we'll give it a shot. We don't. We're going back to Memphis. Now, he didn't include that part, but I knew what he meant. And Dave Baker was sitting next to me, and I'm like, okay, so if we don't, this doesn't go, we're going back to Memphis? And Dave says, yeah, it looks like it. Right? So we both knew, and we were in the very last row of the plane. We both knew what he meant. But that doesn't mean everybody else knew. And there was that caused panic in the plane. I mean, panic. And Dave does a great job in the article of capturing all that. But once we finally got through this awful stretch, and he finally does make the landing attempt, We came through and came out down through Lake Pontchartrain, over Lake Pontchartrain, which is not Raystown. It's a little bit bigger. And he glided that thing over that lake, brought it right down in, boom, couldn't have landed any better. There were no emergency vehicles. He mentioned the bus out, they brought the bus out to the tarmac, but that's standard procedure. And the kissing the tarmac thing, I didn't see anybody do that. Now, we were told that Florida, their players kissed the tarmac because they came in 15 minutes before we did. When it was, I guess, we were up in the air, it was awful. They landed when it was awful. And the emergency vehicles I saw were around the Florida plane. They weren't around our plane. And he has no control. Dave is the writer, has no control over that. He's telling you what he's right. People told him that. And it's almost all completely on the spot. Whomever told him, or groups that told him, that we had emergency vehicles around our plane, the bus. Well, the bus was there. The bus is always there. It always comes out. And about players kissing the tarmac, no. Shook up everybody pretty good, but no. But you should read it. It's really, Dave does a great job with it. I mean, it's a great art. And he wrote it in the wake of the Michigan thing about bonding a team and things like that. And that was one wild ride that night, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we just retweeted the link to his story on Penn Live. Yeah. We'll also post it on our Facebook. Can we go check it out?
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, he does a great job with it. And it's not a question of, Dave wasn't on the flight, so it's not like Dave giving at the end. It's other people told him. And I'm sitting thinking, I'm reading it this morning thinking, that's not, that part, whoever told Dave that wasn't quite right. I'm talking about the end. You know, there weren't any emergency vehicles. I mean, the bus is out there like it was supposed to be, and the landing couldn't have been, I mean, that landing was spectacular. The pilot did an incredible job. But, yeah, I'm glad you retweeted the story because I think Dave did an awesome job telling it. And there's some great quotes in there from the players. I mean, when he made the announcement about the fuel thing, and again, Dave Baker and I are sitting together in the back of the plane. We both like, okay, we'll go to Memphis, fine. You know, because we were then talking about where we could go to dinner in Memphis if we had to go back. Okay? I mean, literally. And also, be like, started going crazy, and I said, "I'm trying to think." Yeah, and I was like, "I don't know." We heard everybody going, and I'm like, I said to Dave, "I wonder what they think." And it wasn't like you can get up and like reassure anybody. You can't do that because you have to keep your seatbelt fastened. not exactly a smooth operation up there right now. We're kind of hanging on a little bit. But yeah, read that. It's a great angle. Great angle. And that's a good writer's fine angles. Dave took a national story and did a fabulous job of giving a local, personalized angle to it. Really great writers do that. All right, we will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, next half hour, we'll bring in Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. We'll look at the Big Ten as a whole. Then at 4:06, we'll zero in on Penn State football with Rich Scarsella from the Reading Eagle. So that's what we'll do and how we'll handle it over the next hour. And that's what we have coming up. So, yeah, we retweeted the article.
Yep, we also have it too on our Facebook page. So,
Facebook page. That David Jones from PennLive.com, Patriot News, wrote. And Oh, and then I told you a story off the air that we can't tell on the air.
That's one of the perks I love for now being part on this show.
Like, well, there's one other story from inside there that didn't get out. Had nothing to do with me. I'm just sitting there watching and listening. It was involved two other people that were not players. That weren't exactly being friendly to one another. We'll leave it at that.
Trust me, the first thing when I get home, when I go through the door, I'll say to my wife, you'll never guess what Steve told me today. I don't do that. So we got to ring in the how was your day first.
How are the cats?
Oh, yeah. They're doing great. Yes.
Roethlisberger's still a Steeler. Get all the important stuff out of the way first.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting. I listened to an interview yesterday by Mike Dunleavy Sr., who for 20 years, according, he played in the NBA, and then for 20 years was a head coach in the NBA. He's now the head coach at Tulane. I think they only won 6 games this year. And I listened to him on SiriusXM, and certain people you want to listen to because of their experience. I want to listen to people who have been around the block. I'm not really big in listening to people cutting their teeth for the first time and so forth. I want to listen to somebody that has a little world experience to them because they can bring some perspective to what's going on instead of guessing. And Mike Dunleavy Sr. is one of those people. 20 years of coaching in the NBA, son, of course, that played high-level college basketball. He has another son who's an assistant at Villanova right now. And he was talking about, as a college coach now, this is a go-around for him as a college coach, he brings a pro mentality to it. And part of bringing the pro mentality to it, so he was talking about the 8 hours a week that coaches have in the off-season. And I have always felt and thoroughly believe that one of the elements that is lacking for freshmen coming into college is a lack of player development. And I feel more so about this with basketball than with football. I feel like the player development's a little bit better in football as opposed to basketball. I think part of that is the AAU experience, where I'm not so sure a lot of time is being spent on player development, but you are in a showcase where you're playing games and can show what you can do. And I understand that completely. Is that being done at the expense of individual player development? And he said, look, coaches have 8 hours a week during the offseason, during designated times, where they're allowed 2 hours on the court with them. And then, let's face it, then the other 6 hours are strength and conditioning, weight training. Let's run in the sandpit. He says, I think you should let the coaches have a bigger say as to how they want to spend that 8 hours. Do you want to spend that all 8 hours on player development? Now, in reality, you don't. You've got to break it up somehow. I mean, that'd be idiotic to spend all 8 hours doing that. Do you want to spend 2 hours on a court, 2 hours doing film, 4 hours doing strength and conditioning? And, of course, when everybody's out in July recruiting, there's nobody on campus anyway. The players are. Coaches are out doing a lot of recruiting at that time and can't do as much player development. Just a thought. There could be unintended consequences. Like Sean, every day he does this show, realizes there are unintended consequences. Sunbury Motors Lincoln continues to satisfy the most discerning buyer by making American luxury affordable. If you are looking for a midsize SUV, the Lincoln MKX has to be on your list. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has a brand new 2016 Black Velvet MKX all-wheel drive with navigation and panoramic vista roof with an MSRP of $48,640 for only $43,352. That's $5,288 in savings. You can choose from 12 MKXs in stock now. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has 5 2017 Lincoln Continentals in stock, ready for the test drive of your life. The 2017 Continental won the coveted 2017 AutoGuide.com Reader's Choice Luxury Car of the Year Award. Sunbury Motors has a 2017 Continental with an MSRP of $48,315, discounted to $46,315. Now is the time to see why more people are realizing they can move up to a brand new Lincoln from Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In just a few moments, Adam Rittenberg. Next half hour, Rich Scarsella. Time now for this day in sports history. 1893, Northampton, Massachusetts. The first women's collegiate basketball game was played at Smith College. 1923, the great Foster Hewitt used a telephone to broadcast the first hockey game. He called the game between Kitchener and Toronto Parkdale. The Foster Hewitt Award is named after him, obviously. 1934, the first Masters Golf Championship began at Augusta. 1967, Muhammad Ali beat Zorro Foley, Madison Square Garden, knocked him out in seven rounds. Why is that significant? It is the last fight he had before being stripped of his heavyweight championship for refusing to be inducted into the U.S. Army. Did not fight again for 2.5 years. 1969, UCLA behind Ferdinand Lewis Alcindor Jr., a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, beat Purdue to become the first college basketball team to win three straight NCAA championships. 1979, the National Hockey League announced that it would accept four WHA teams, the Edmonton Oilers, the Winnipeg Jets, the Quebec Nordiques, and the Hartford Whalers. Today, the Oilers are still there. The Jets are actually the Arizona Coyotes. The Nordiques are the Colorado Avalanche, and the Whalers are the Carolina Hurricanes. You're saying, well, wait, the Winnipeg Jets are in. That's the Atlanta Thrashers who moved to Winnipeg. And in 1994, the NFL announced the addition of the two-point conversion. It was the league's first scoring change in 75 years. Way behind the times. The AFL had that two-point conversion in 1960, as did college football. 34 years later, the NFL's like, you know, I think we'll give it a shot. Man, are they slow to do things sometimes. All right, now let's turn to Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Adam, always great to hear you on the other end. Welcome back.
Oh, good to be with you, Steve.
All right, so we some teams have started, Penn State starting today. On your checklist, what are three or four items in the conference that you will find interesting over the next couple, 3 weeks as teams try to make progress?
Yeah, you always have to start with new coaches. You know, Tom Allen's not a new coach at Indiana because he was there as defensive coordinator, but certainly continuing to upgrade that defense, which I was surprised to see. They had a player lead the conference in tackles, total tackles, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, fumbles recovered, and I think one other category. So that's going to be interesting. You know, Jeff Brohm down at Purdue, had a chance to spend some time with him recently. Very interesting to see what he can do with his track record on offense. They're not going to be there this year, but they're a team to watch under his leadership, even in this first spring. And then P.J. Fleck, all the energy that he's going to bring up to Minnesota, a team that had a lot of success last year. How are players going to respond to him? You know, quarterback competitions, there actually aren't as many in the Big Ten this year. The league returned top five passers from last year, but you know, there are a few programs that will have some interesting situations. Nebraska is one of them. I think Iowa is another one. And then, you know, just generally, you know, who replaces some of the stars in this conference on both sides of the ball. This conference is still looking for some really good receivers. I know Penn State lost a really good one. They bring back some pieces, but Ohio State, who's going to step up there? I mean, their last game was an embarrassment on offense that we haven't seen that before from an Urban Meyer team. So, who steps in there for the Buckeyes to become a playmaker on that side of the ball alongside JT Barrett will be very interesting this spring with a new coordinator as well and Kevin Wilson.
You mentioned, Adam, during that answer, Minnesota with P.J. Fleck. As time has gone, the players that put through their appeals that had been suspended, is that just now? I saw Antoine Winfield obviously was the one I think that was the biggest name of all. Has that finally settled down for them?
Yeah, it has. And, you know, again, I have maybe an unpopular opinion on the whole Minnesota thing, but I think that not necessarily that Tracy Clay's got a raw deal, but in a sense he did, because if you really study the context around what happened there, Steve, I know you did, you know, the only reason that they boycotted was because they were not told anything by the administration, and all of a sudden 10 players are suspended, many of whom were not even at the apartment when this incident occurred. Now, that was an awful incident, whether it was illegal or not, but why are these players being suspended and they're not telling us anything? That's why they boycotted. That's why Tracy put out the tweet, and that's why he got fired. And now we come to learn that most of those players, all the players who were not there, have now been cleared. There's only been a handful that have received penalties from the university from that Title IX investigation. So I'm interested to see how this team responds to P.J. Fleck, because I know they were responding well to Tracy Clay's. I know that was a team that had a lot of success and exceeded expectations last year. But the dynamic in that locker room is going to be fascinating. But to answer your question, yes, I think all those cases have been resolved, and Minnesota knows which players it will have for next year and which players it will not have.
In a span of 13 months, Illinois athletic director Josh Whitman has found himself a new football coach, a new men's basketball coach, a new women's basketball coach. What kind of dynamic do you think he's bringing to Champaign?
Well, I've been impressed with his decisiveness. He's a guy that clearly understands the way that searches are done in this environment. He doesn't use search firms, which I think is great. I think he makes fairly splashy hires, and he's decisive about it. I really enjoyed listening to him the other day in the introduction of Brad Underwood, the basketball coach, talking about the process of finding him and who he was calling and how they were able to do that quickly and decisively. Time will tell if Lovie Smith works out. I have my doubts there, but we'll see. It's only year two, and he has recruited at a decent level. I think Underwood was a great hire. I know Josh Whitman hired, I believe, the Washington University longtime women's basketball coach who he worked with down at WashU to head that program, and I think he still has to find a volleyball coach. So, you know, he has been very busy in putting his stamp on the program, but I know Illinois fans that I've talked to living in Chicago are excited about the leadership that they have there, and that's been their problem. They have a school and a program with a lot going for itself. It's a great academic school. They've had success in basketball. Historically, they've had success in football, and yet they have not had strong enough leadership to put it all together for sustained periods. And so I think they feel now with Josh Whitman there that they're at least on the right track to having more success.
Michigan's always going to be interesting, including taking a trip to Italy and so forth. What are the areas where Jim Harbaugh has to settle his, what positions on the field does he need to settle here to make give themselves a run in the East?
Well, other than quarterback, Steve, pick one.
Yeah, they're thin.
They are the thinnest team in the country, at least if you're judging by returning starters. You know, Phil Steele put out his list about a month ago, and they have four or five, I believe, is the lowest number in all of the FBS. Now, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily in big trouble, because there's a lot of teams that return bad starters and they don't have anybody else to step in. Michigan's not one of those teams. They've recruited at a high level, and I think because of that recruiting, they have a chance to continue to have success. But yes, absolutely. Running back, who's going to step in there? You had a young guy step up late last season. Ty Isaac is still there as well. Wide receiver, they lose Chesson and Darbo. Tight end, they lose one of the best players in the country in Jake Butt. Rashawn Gary, who was the number one overall recruit last year at defensive line, he would have a bigger role, you would figure, on the defensive line this year. But they don't have too many pieces to build around. Mike McCray at linebacker is really one of the only ones, they're talking to coaches, that people know about in the conference. So it's going to be fascinating to see all the competition, which I know Jim Harbaugh welcomes, on the field this spring. And I'm sure it's going to continue into the fall. Now, Wilton Spate, you know, certainly enters the spring as the starting quarterback, and we all expect him to be the starting quarterback when they open up the season against Florida in September. But I also hear some very encouraging things about Brandon Peters, who's a redshirt freshman, a recruit in the 2016 class, that, you know, he's a guy that could push for that starting position sooner than later. So it's going to be one of the more interesting spring practices into the summer and then into fall camp, because they have so many holes to fill in starting spots.
Obviously, Michigan's not a mediocre program, but I always love the mediocre program joke when they say, we got good news and bad news. Well, what's the good news? The good news is we have 10 starters returning. What's the bad news? We have 10 starters returning. Like, oh, that's great. We didn't get any better. Ohio State, they consistently lose players, and sometimes it's certain positions to the draft. This time it's the secondary. What about that program, where they are in terms of the ability to replace and go forward?
Yeah, you know, that's going to be really interesting. And they've done a great job on defense of reloading historically. I mean, there were questions about that secondary entering last year, and then they come out and Malik Hooker has a huge year, and Conley and so forth. They have so many playmakers on that side of the ball, but they're going to have to answer some questions again this spring. Now, the good news for Ohio State is their defensive line should be one of the best in the country.
Right.
No secret to people where you live, with Larry Johnson heading that group. They did get Tyquan Lewis coming back. Sam Hubbard is still there. Nick Bosa is going to be a sophomore after playing a lot last year. So it's a great foundation for them on that side of the ball. Should be okay at linebacker as well with Worley and Baker. But that secondary is going to be fascinating to see who steps up to become playmakers, because losing Lattimore and Conley and Hooker were all very, very valuable pieces. I do think the bigger issue for Ohio State, though, is on offense, just the way they ended the season. Not being able to score, and really, if you just study the last four or five games, really from the Penn State game on, they did not look like the Ohio State offense, and they overran JT Barrett. If you talk to coaches in the conference, they all talk about he was run too much last year, and it changed the way he operated in the pocket. So they need to create a reason for him to stay in the pocket and then try to attack downfield, especially after losing Curtis Samuel. I think Mike Weber is a good back. He's a young guy, but I don't think he's an Ezekiel Elliott type.
No.
So they're going to need others at the H-back position, tight end, certainly wide receiver, to emerge. And it'll be very interesting to see how the offense changes under Kevin Wilson, who was an outstanding offensive coordinator at Oklahoma and did a great job with the offenses in Indiana. I know there's a lot of respect between Urban Meyer and Kevin Wilson, who's now together in Columbus.
This is only my opinion, and if you differ, please chime in. But I felt in watching Ohio State last year, whether it was on tape or in person, that they only had one home run hitter on that offense, and that
right.
was Samuel.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think part of it, from talking to coaches, is that they were vulnerable on the offensive line, especially at the tackle position, which is understandable. Isaiah Prince is a young player. Jamarco Jones a little bit older, but you know, I think those guys having a year of experience should help, because teams felt they could really get to JT Barrett in the pocket. But as far as who he can attack to downfield, that's very much up for debate. And they return to a number of guys who got experience. KJ Hill was out there a little bit. McLaurin. Yeah, he was out there. So, I mean, these guys have played a little bit. But
yeah.
You're right, Curtis Samuel, you knew the ball was going to number four in different ways, and there weren't other guys to emerge as game breakers. And that's just very unusual to see for an Ohio State team. But I think the key there will be the development of the edges of the offensive line
right. So
that they have enough confidence to let plays develop and be able to attack downfield as they did, you know, throughout the first part of Urban's tenure there in Columbus.
Finally, I'll ask you about Penn State. When you look at the Nittany Lions, Adam, what are a few things on the checklist you want to see over the next 3 weeks?
Offensive line, you know, I did a future power rankings item the other day where I basically projected out the next 3 years on offenses around the country. And I think I put Penn State fifth or sixth, and I was tempted to put them even higher because I just love the outlook at the skill position. They have, I believe, the best running back in the country returning in Saquon Barkley. Trace McSorley talked to coaches, and they just rave about how competitive he is. Yes, he takes risks, but he also makes a lot of big plays. And I love the outlook at receiver and tight end. The thing everyone says is the offensive line is just not where it needs to be yet. I have a lot of respect for Matt Limegrover. I think he'll continue to build that unit. But that's the one group that could hold them back a little bit on offense. Otherwise, I see them continuing to put up a lot of points under Joe Moorhead. And then on the defensive side, you're just looking for difference makers, as always. You want to see guys that are capable of changing games with big plays. And whether that's, I think, a linebacker group, which will be very deep this year, in the secondary, who's going to step up and be kind of a Big Ten national-type award candidate, that's always interesting to me. But I just am very interested in the offensive line to see if they can take another step forward, because that would be the only group, I think, that could hold them back on offense.
Adam, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for everything. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Rich Scarsella, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Trace McSorley, Jason Gabinda, Nick Scott will be the football captains this year for the Nittany Lions, as announced today. Talk with Rich Scarsella in the next half hour, day before the NCAA basketball tournament storm, Sweet 16 time. Big gathering over at Sean's house. Looking forward to it. Chip and dip night.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, BYOB.
Okay.
Okay, Jason Tatum is going to enter the NBA draft after 1 year Duke. Oh, stunning. Let's see. Doug Gottlieb is actually going to interview for the Oklahoma State basketball job. How about that? Penn State, by the way, the Oklahoma State is in a tournament with Penn State next year at the Barclays. So it brings a little more intrigue to it than just, hey, oh, yeah, see what they're going to Oklahoma State.
Well, they're definitely fond of him. He'd be going back to his alma mater. So, yeah, who'd have thought? He may not be going to another network, we first thought.
Right. Well, we'll see. He wants an interview for it.
Yeah. Keep his options open. Yeah.
What they think, I don't know. Yeah. Ah. Let's see. It's another big day for LeVar Ball, as LeVar Kardashian did a good job of getting his name out there again.
LeVar Kardashian. That's good.
I mean, you know, he's just, whatever. let's see. Very nice.
I'm just looking for a mock draft. Yeah. I'm just looking for a mock draft that has Lonzo Ball not going to the Lakers.
Well, you know what's interesting about this situation is he does a lot of talking. And I just mentioned Muhammad Ali in this day in sports history. Muhammad Ali did a lot of talking, a lot of talking, a lot of talking, a lot of talking. And guess what he did? Almost every single time out, he backed it up. Okay? Now, he had a team around him. Boondini Brown, Angelo Dundee, Freddie Pacheco. Okay? But Muhammad Ali was still the one who had to go out and get it done. So everything he said, he could personally back up. Okay? LeVar Ball, his kid has to back him up. if his kid plays well, it backs him up. If he doesn't play well, he has no control over it. None. He does all the talking and doesn't do anything to back it up. His son has to do it for him. Okay. All right.
I'll tell you the one thing, though, I have noticed. I mean, Lonzo Ball hasn't talked to the media all that much. And when he does, it's brief and right to the point. Not like the old man.
You watch him play. He's got a great game. He's a much better shooter than you realize. He's an awesome passer, good rebounder, good sense, good feel for the game. And when he's interviewed, he acts like he's a pretty normal kid. So anytime LeVar Kardashian comes up, we'll get to it. Keep everybody in the loop. What's next, a reality show? It'd be a show about nothing. Oh, wait. Seinfeld already did that and made a ton of money.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.